105.4.
Well, it's Sunday evening, another Magic Indulgence at Magic 105.4, and my special guest tonight, looking forward to talking to him about his amazing career for the next 60 minutes or so, playing some of his favourite songs from Magic as well, and it's William Roach. William, welcome to Magic.
Steve, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
Very good evening to you, and we're going to get stuck into your first song straight away. It's Louis Armstrong and Wonderful World. Well, what a flying start.
It's a great song, isn't it?
It is a good song. Louis Armstrong there and Wonderful World at Magic 105.4. My special guest tonight is William Roach. Now, William, we're going to play some of your favourite songs for you. By your own admission, you're not that musical.
No, not terribly musical, I'm afraid, no.
But I guess, like everybody, there's certain songs that there's been at certain
there's
points of your life.
Stick in your mind and you associate with certain eras. And I mean, I love music. I wish I was musical. In fact, I did the Celebrity Stars in Their Eyes and I got this letter saying, would I do it? And my wife said, no, you're not doing that. So I said, I want to walk down the road. And so we decided to do Perry Como. Now, I know a lot of people love Perry Como, and he's brilliant, but he's also wonderfully laid back. And I thought, that's what I want. And I did a very simple song, Catch a Falling Star, and I had a Walkman, and I banged this song in, and I did it. I got away with it, and I'm retiring now. That's it.
Were you nervous?
Extremely nervous, because I wanted to sing. I'd love to be able to sing, and I I did get away with it. I've got bad hearing anyway, which makes life more difficult. I really envy people who can get up there and let rip, either on the piano or with their voice. I'd love to be musical, but I'm just not.
And I suppose as much as you're in front of a camera, and you have been for many, many years, it's being out of that comfort zone when you're singing, because it's something you've never really tried before.
What amazed me when I did this, I thought singing will be easy because the music will sort of take you along, everything will fall into a groove, but horror upon horrors. Not only do you have to remember the words, you have to come in on the beat and you have to hit the right note and then move about as well. It was really quite difficult, but I did enjoy it.
And even harder with it's because you've got tinnitus, haven't you?
Yes.
And this is something that you and James Blunt have in common, because you were both in the army many years ago.
Yes, I was in charge of a mortar platoon and a mortar bomb went off above the head of the mortar. And I was actually deaf for about 3 weeks. Now I can't hear my watch and things like that and have a permanent sort of ringing. So it makes it difficult to hear sometimes.
So Army to Coronation Street.
Yes.
An interesting move. How did it start?
Well, really, if you go further back than that, my family were all doctors. My grandfather's a doctor. My father was a doctor. And I felt I should follow the family footsteps. But I didn't get into medical college. I had to wait. And then National Service said, you come in the Army. And I thought, well, if I get commissioned, I'll stay in. So I did. I took a short service commission. I did 6 years in the Army, landed up as a captain, and the last 2 years I was in what we now call the Gulf. So it was an interesting Army career. Then at the age of 26, I'd always wanted to act, but I thought I was too shy, and I thought all actors were overconfident, hello darling people, Fortunately they're not. In my experience, all good actors are very sensitive and fairly introverted people. But I thought, I've got to give it a go. So I gave it a go, and I'm still giving it a go.
And I guess it gives you good perspective having done that before as well. Let's throw some names at you here, because this is it my right in saying it's 47 years?
Absolutely.
You've been in Coronation Street.
47
years. An incredible legacy, still going strong.
Well, nobody does anything for 47
years.
Well,
no, they don't.
No, no. I mean, absolutely. And you're quite right. The great thing about it is it's not just a show that's been going for 47 years. It's still top of the ratings. At the end of every year, when they add the aggregate figures up, we come out number one. So that's the great thing. And I love it. I'm very proud of it and proud to belong to it. And I don't want to retire.
No.
While I can do it and while they want me, I'll be in there.
Well, that must play a huge part in your decision when you see it still doing well. I suppose if you can see something that's in steady decline, you think, right, time to get out. That was a good time.
You know, the BBC were extraordinary, because during the life of Coronation, they started Compact and United and all sorts of serials. And they used to think, oh, it's doing well, let's take it off. Hmm. Which was a very strange philosophy. And I remember Cecil Bernstein, who ran Granada at the time, people were telling him, look, take it off while it's good, while it's going strong. And he said, no, keep it on. Seems a very strange thing. If you're sliding, but sometimes we will slip back onto our ratings a little and they realise they've got to do something. But the show is a living organism and it's adapted and changed over the years. Had it not, it would have crustified and died like an old dinosaur. But it's very much alive and very strong and kicking. It's great.
Well, we're going to talk about some of the new characters later.
Okay.
In the meantime, let me throw these ones at you. Elsie Tanner.
Yeah.
Annie Walker.
Yeah.
Hilda Ogden.
Mm-hmm.
Bette Lynch. Mavis Rita. You've seen them all.
Yeah.
Very, very strong women. Some would say quite scary women.
Well, very
Does it
scary.
Surprise you that it's a man that's lasted the distance?
Not really, because the powerful characters, you feel like the old Chinese proverb, if a nail stands out, it has to be hammered in. Ken's just been a nice guy, a sort of peacemaker as he was going along, doing his bit, and I played him as truthfully as I can. But yeah, it is a female show, because essentially it's about gossip. Part of it is about what happens, the rest of it is gossiping in the Rovers or in the cabin or the corner shop. So it is a female show, and the dominant characters have pretty well always been female. You've got Blanche now, wonderful, sort of carrying on Ina's banner, as it were.
Mm. So, and quite a scary character as well.
Oh, well, he's a scary character, yeah.
Enough to write a book about here. Yeah. Soul on the Street. Yep. This is going to be some interesting reading. Were you asked to write a book, or did you decide you wanted to do it?
Well, I did my biography in the 1990s. This isn't just a biography, it's more than that. All my life, I've wanted to know what we are, why we're here, is there a life after death? All sorts of questions I've been asking that no one would answer. So I went on my own spiritual journey, as it were. It's an inward journey. It got to a point where I found to my satisfaction certain wonderful things, and I wanted to give those out in a book, but it only seemed right to hang it on a peg of my life, showing, first of all, why I needed to find out, secondly, how I went about finding out, thirdly, what I have found out, and fourthly, how you can sort of live with it. So that is my book, Soul on the Street, is really about my spiritual journey.
Right, so that's going to be a very interesting read, particularly for people that feel that they've known you for years and years now.
Yeah.
Now, by your own admission, you're not that musical.
Nope.
However, you have picked some incredibly good music tonight.
Oh, well, you're very kind. I mean, it has to be incredibly good to penetrate my sort of unmusical ego, so the good ones get through.
Well, here's a man that I think, you know, you certainly didn't miss him, and obviously very sad news a few weeks ago, but Pavarotti and Ness and Dorn were going to play next. You must have been very sad when you heard about
that. Well, you know, again, the classical music has been coming to the fore, and we've got a lot of singers now, Russell and people. But I remember seeing a programme about Pavarotti, and someone was talking the difference between him and other people, and his mother said, he makes me cry. And then I listened to him, having heard that, and I could feel that this big guy, there he was, singing away full volume, but there was something incredibly moving about him. So I really grew to like him. I think he's wonderful.
Perfect. I'm stopping right there because we'll go straight to the song. You see?
Okay.
You see? Well, it was fantastic.
Well, we get there. With your guidance.
Yeah. Well, no, this is great. It's great. Now, William, Corrie used to be shown live, didn't it?
Well, when it started on the 9th of December 1960, I remember the first episode. The first episode was live, and then afterwards we'd record the other, but in a way that couldn't be edited, so it was almost like doing it live. That only happened for 3 months. Then there was a strike, and it was knocked out of sync. So from then on, we recorded it, but it was done in that way for many years that it couldn't be edited, so it was pretty nerve-wracking.
I bet. What was the thinking behind that?
It was the technology, the way they were in the 60s. I forget the name of the tape. It sounded Amtex, so it sounded like a breath refresher or something, but it was some system that they just couldn't edit.
So you gaffed on a line. It was in the show.
Straight it, that was it.
And did that happen a lot? Not you personally.
We used to mistakes used to go out. There were all sorts of errors and things. And if it went wrong, that was it. You just put up with it. But at least in those days, we only did two a week, and we had rehearsals and technical run-throughs and producers run-throughs. So we knew it pretty well. Now, filming goes on from 8 in the morning till 7 at night, 6 days a week, and there's no rehearsal, there's no prompting, and you have to be word perfect. So you just have to know your words. You get on the set and you just do it like filming.
I suppose as media and television in general has become much more cutthroat, it's just become a much more serious business, hasn't
it? It's become a more immediate business. And in a sense, I like the way we work now, except the learning is very hard. But what happens, if you've got to get angry, for instance, you just learn your words really, really well. You get on the set, you do your words quietly to get the moves and the cameras right. You get everything ready. And then the director said, OK, well, let's go for it. So then you get angry. And you just, it's like pouring a current through a circuit.
Yeah.
You just hope your circuit is strong enough to take it, that the words are going to be at your disposal as you're ranting and raving or crying or whatever you're doing. But it's for real.
So is there room for improvisation in it a
not
bit?
Whatsoever.
Not
no,
at all,
you,
right.
Say, you have to actually have to be word perfect. It'll stop you.
Right.
It'll stop and say, no, you said this, Bill, and you should have said that. It has to be word perfect. So you have to know it so well And when you do it, you just pour that emotion in. So in a sense, you get the real thing.
And 6 days a week, this isn't like sort of going in at nine almost and finishing at one or something. This is absolutely full
on. Yeah, but no one actor is ever doing that, of course.
No,
And like, for instance, last week, I went in on Monday morning, did one scene and went home, and that was my week's work. Mm. So you can be as light as that.
And you know that's coming and you can plan accordingly,
yeah, that's
suppose.
Right. Yeah. But if you're heavily committed, you're hanging around pretty well all that time, and then you've got learning to do at night. So it can be very demanding when you've got a big story.
Mm, absolutely. Now, you've been married in this. How many times is it? Three?
I've been married four times.
Four
twice
times
to the
now.
Same person, to Deirdre. I have 23 girlfriends and three wives, but I've been married four times.
You're a walking encyclopedia, William.
Well, I suppose, you know, I've lived it.
Yeah, you have lived it. This has been your life, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So it was Valerie Tatlock in 62.
Yeah, well done.
Janet Reid in 73.
Yeah.
And Deirdre in 81, there you go, and again in 2005.
That's it. Absolutely.
I mean, obviously, you've been through them.
I've been through them. And you see, the fact he's had all these girlfriends and wives doesn't mean that he's a great Lothario. It means he's pathetic at hanging on to his women. He can't do it, really.
I must remember that the bits I remember was when I was watching, you know, when I was religiously watching Corrie, which would have been sort of 15 years ago, because my mother loved it
right,
so much.
Yeah,
it was very much the sparring between you and Johnny
Mike
Briggs,
Baldwin,
of course.
Yeah. Oh, no, we had some great stuff, Johnny and myself. I mean, I'd thump him 1 year and the next year he'd thump me and so
it was
on,
cracking, wasn't it?
It was good stuff.
It was.
And when he died, it was a wonderful touch by the writer that he should die in the arms of his arch enemy, you know. That scene was done, you know. It was 11 o'clock one night and it was raining. We're out on the cobbles. The director said, just sort of walk through it like we do. Then he had to stumble and fall and I had to catch him. So let's just practice that and put a mattress down where you fall. And then it was raining and everybody wanted to get in. So, okay, now let's just go for it. So we went for it and did it. In a very, I felt I hadn't really put anything into it. They said, right, that's it. And everybody went.
That was it.
Done.
And that remains one of the great scenes, doesn't it?
I just wish we could have done it a couple more times. But there we go.
Might be a perfect moment to go into Dr. Hook and when you're in love with the beautiful women. You see, we don't just throw this stuff together.
Right, you don't.
Dr. Hook, do you remember what you were doing, where you were in your life when this was first a hit song?
No, I can't really. It's just that certain songs penetrate my very unmusical psyche. And so if they do, there must be something special about them. And that one did. I don't know why. I just love it. I just like it.
Brilliant. Now you're very much part of the old guard. You see a lot of new faces coming through. You know, people talk about this if someone's been in something for 5 years these days.
I know.
The amount of transition you must have seen, and obviously the way the show's working and the fact that you are filming 6 days a week, it's now four times a week as a show?
Five now. Yeah,
so,
twice on Monday.
You know, huge amounts of pressure, not just for the actors, but for the team in general to get those shows out and also keep that quality control
up.
Yeah,
yeah.
So you're, because you're always kind of having this spar with EastEnders over on the other side.
Well, we don't.
Or is that a media thing?
No, that is a media thing. Right. What we do, if you start relating what you're doing to other soaps, you're asking for trouble. But often things will coincide, but the writers are writing 6 months ahead. We have a monumental indifference to what the others are doing, but if our ratings sort of settle back a bit, then let's have a look at that. What are we doing here? Maybe revitalize it a bit. On we go. So you look to yourself and your own audience. You don't look to others and what they're doing.
But there's always been a lot of humour in Coronation Street.
Oh, tremendous, yeah. And that's because the stories are character-based, and if you're character-based, humour will come from the characters as well. And it also, we've got our Norrises and our Duckworths, the sort of characters, you just mentioned their names and people smile. We've got our comedy characters. EastEnders know that it's said about them that they don't have as much comedy as we do. But there's nothing they can do about it. It's sort of endemic. The writers know how to write it. You see, if you write a funny line in a serious situation, either the funny line won't work or the serious situation will be damaged unless it's done with finesse and with knowledge and with experience. Writers know how to write it. We know how to play it.
Yeah, not trying too hard to be funny.
Don't try to be funny.
No.
Be real. And the situation, for instance, Blanche can be being really cutting, but she's also very funny.
Nothing funnier than real life.
Right,
and
absolutely.
You've had so many new faces coming in, like Maureen Littman, Ian McKellen.
Yeah.
Bradley Walsh, Kim Ryder, Keith Duffy. We're going to play a song from
Keith
Hit
Duffy,
Band.
Yeah.
But when they come in on set, do you think it must be very intimidating for them to coming into what is a national institution, effectively?
It may be, I don't know. But then a lot of these people, like Ian McKellen, you know, I mean, they're institutions in their
own
right.
Yeah,
and it's quite sort of, it's very refreshing for us. It's very nice to have new people coming. We're very friendly. We're known to be, people often come in, I'm not saying other series aren't friendly, but they always say how friendly and helpful we all are. We all get on extremely well professionally. We don't meet up socially. We go home and do our own thing. But it is a happy show, professionally particularly.
Well, when you get back on set, because I know you're on a break at the moment, you have to go up to Keith Duffy and tell him that you've got one of his band songs played on Magic for him, all right?
Well, of course, Keith has left, so don't see him now.
That's right. He has gone, hasn't he?
Yes,
well, I'm sure.
Left.
Do you stay in touch with any of the people?
Not really. You know, it's amazing. The show is like a big juggernaut. Mm. When you're doing five a week and it rolls on rapidly. My summer break, when I go back, I'll feel like a schoolboy who's been away for a long time.
Oh, really?
You feel out of touch. And people who leave, it's no good turning up in the green room because everyone's walking around with their scenes in their head. They've got things to do. It's not a great social place, and we all get on well in the green room. But for people to drop in, you tend not to want to. Not many do once they've gone.
It's incredible hearing you say that after 47 years. You still go back in. It feels like new term at school.
Yeah, I do. Oh, absolutely, I do. And the way it rolls on. And people say, as an elder statesman, do the youngsters come up and ask for advice? But the young ones who come in, they're so confident and they're so good. I feel I should go and ask them for advice.
Yes, yes. Well, I guess that's just the world we live in at the moment, isn't it?
It is. I think you're right.
Keith Duffy, then. In honour of Keith.
In honour of
And his Pam Boyce, then. How about we do a bit of No Matter What?
Why not?
I bet you were blasting out in the dressing room.
Yeah, go on then. Let's enjoy it.
Now, William, your fame's allowed you to take part in lots of other projects. You're in the game show marathon last year with Anton Deck.
Oh, yes.
You sound absolutely delighted about that.
Well, I did all right in the Golden Shot, but...
Lost out to Vernon Kay in Bullseye.
Yes, and that's because, my dart player was a lovely chap, but he just couldn't get the darts in. And also some of the questions I got, I just hadn't a clue what they were. But it was fun.
Practising on the Rovers dart.
I did practice, but so did Vernon Kay. He practised for hours and he missed every single one of his things. But mind you, even the professional dart player did. Mind you, they were drinking lager all day. But I think that's supposed to help them, isn't it?
I think maybe it does. It's one of those games.
Yeah,
I think.
Well, it didn't help my guy on the day.
You only have to look at the stomachs of some of the professional darts players to realise that, I think.
But it was something different. Mm.
And what about the reality TV these days? Because there's so much of it around. I'm always sort of, you know, put my hands up and said, I'm not a massive fan, to be honest, of a lot of
these
reality shows.
I agree with you. And the trouble is, there's less drama. So it's worse. My youngest son, Will, is just starting acting as we speak now. And there's less drama, less theatre, so it's harder for them. I don't mind the celebrity. Reality shows where there's a skill, where people are learning something, I can enjoy that. But where it's just people sitting around in a room...
Agreed. Even I'm a celebrity at a stretch, you could say that. They're learning some sort of survival skills, but something like Big Brother, for example.
I mean, let's have it up to point, but don't let it dominate and be prime time and all the time. Let's get some dramas back in.
And the amount of media interest in it is just so depressing, generally.
Yeah, it is
well.
Depressing, actually, because there's no particular skills or anything there like that. I mean, take my hat off to the celebrity get me out of here people, but I'd just like to see more drama.
I mean, it's funny when you think when you were starting out, and certainly, you know, for a good 20-30 years you were in the show, Britain was absolutely leading the world in drama.
Absolutely.
And all of a sudden it's turned around and all the good stuff's coming out of the States.
Yeah, because what did our people do? I mean, Granada used to be a big production company, making new productions, inventing. You've got to take risks, and they don't, you see, now. They want to say, oh, prove me this is going to be all right. Get a big name in, do all that sort of business. Play safe. Down you go. You've got to take risks, and this is what we've got to do, get back to being a producing company again.
Let's do a bit of Elton John now.
Elton John, isn't
and
he
your
lovely?
Song. He's a very, very good musician.
Dear
and
old
he's
Elton.
A big Magic favourite, of course. Yeah. Amazing live. I don't know whether you've seen him live.
Well, I saw that show of his the other night.
The Red Piano.
He's lovely, isn't he? And you can't help but like him. And he's very honest about himself. There's no trying to pretend or no hypocrisy about Elton. He's just great. And I thought that Candle in the Wind song, I haven't tired of it. I wish he'd sing it again. And I'd like to hear that again, but it's not on the list, is it?
No.
Is it? I'd like to hear that. Why not? It's not been played for
not?
A long time.
Well, let's
get that in.
And of course, this song has the distinction of being the biggest selling single in the UK ever.
And it all went to charity.
It did.
That was absolutely brilliant. And it was pertinent, appropriate, moving, musical, everything you want in the song. And as I said, my musical ability is very limited and it takes a lot of hammering to get a song into me. But that one certainly got in and I loved it. We got one in inadvertently.
I know.
One crept in from
this
the screen.
Perfect. I might talk to you about Biggles. Now, I'll
about
put my hands up. Biggles, when you were Biggles?
Yes?
I'll put my hands up high. Nothing. It's been researching.
Well done.
Tony Warren spotted you? and declare.
No, wait a minute. Let's get this right. Are we on air?
Let's start. How would you like me to
Well, wait a minute. Yeah, I did. I was in Biggles. Before Coronation Street started, there were Skyport, Night Out and Biggles. I did bits in those. Then I got a lead in a play, Marking Time. I played a young soldier in Germany. That's when Tony Warren spotted me. But I'd like to talk about Biggles because I've got a funny story.
Okay, go on.
Okay. Well, are we on air?
Go into it.
Okay. Now, people may not realise this. There was life before Ken Barlow.
There was
wasn't
indeed.
There could be plenty of life after him, hopefully, but there was certainly life before. And one of them was when you played Biggles.
In Biggles. No, I didn't play Biggles. No, I was in Biggles.
You were in Biggles,
yeah.
Right.
And they had a scene where Biggles was supposed to be flying over the Arctic, and it was all done in a great hurry, a great rush. So they had the designer paint an ice floe on the blue inner corner of the studio, and a camera was just going to pass over it. And the director said, I want an extra in a polar bear skin to be standing on it, sort of doing that to make it look like it's the Arctic. So it got near to this scene, and the director said, right, have we got the extra with the polar bear outfit? And wardrobe mistress came out, said, can I speak to you? She said, look, I'm sorry, I'm in a hurry, I've got no time at all. Get him on there, get him on, and get the camera. So they got the extra on, got the camera to pass over, and the polar bear said, like that. And he had a black bow tie and buttons down the front, and the wardrobe mistress had tried to tell him, but he wouldn't listen. And they actually shot it.
That must have been quite an amazing thing to do.
Well, those days, everything was done in a hurry. It was extraordinary.
Now, you've been married to your wife, Sarah, for 30 years.
Well done. No, well, yes, we've been together 35 years. Yes, absolutely. Well done. You've got that right. We are one of the most enduring show business marriages. And Sarah's wonderful. She was an actress and she's my manager as well. And she played the judge who sent Tracy down.
No.
Yes.
Well, I never
yeah.
knew
now,
that.
Tracy, as you know, was an upfront murderess and all that. Yeah. And when Sarah came in to play the judge, the director said, now, I want you to give Tracy a look that says, don't mess with me. And that's the look that I get on a daily basis. I always say that. Mm. But she's very good. She looks after me very well.
And again, with the filming schedules, although I suppose with her being an actor as well, it does make it easier. They understand
well,
the pressures.
Well, she fully understands what's going on. Yeah, and it does help. Yeah.
And being a manager as well, it's like, go and ask more money.
Yeah.
Get
that's
in
right.
There.
Absolutely. Mm. Yes,
and you mentioned your youngest son a while ago, and he's going down the acting route as well.
Well, young Will.
With your approval?
It's not a question of my approval so much as seeing whether he knows the pitfalls. He knows it's a business of total rejection most of the time. And it's just in him, rather like my elder son, Linus. It was in him. There's nothing else he wants to do. And he's got it. He's a wonderful mimic. He's really very good. And he started. He's been in Cold Blood, playing John Hannah's son. He's got a very good agent. So fingers crossed, he's going to be the next one.
And do you feel very lucky, the position you've been into, have been in this for 40 years?
I think in this
years.
Business, if you have regular employment like I've had, I've been very, very lucky.
You're very much in the minority there, aren't
Absolutely,
you?
Absolutely, and I do appreciate it. I really do.
And continuous work. As well, which is always wonderful for an actor and very rare these days.
Yeah, it is very rare.
Let's do another song choice. Van Morrison and Have I Told You Lately?
Have I told you lately that
Classic
I love
song.
You? Steve, have I?
I don't believe you have. But
no, I'll tell you later.
Thank you, I'll take
very,
it on the chin.
It's very good, isn't it? That's one that really, I love it. I love the lyrics and everything about it. Really nice.
Is there anybody on the set of Corrie that's really mad into music and always playing songs out of their dressing room? Or?
No, you're not allowed to do that. It'd be very disturbing.
It sounds like quite a discipline, very disciplined
Oh, very, very
set.
It has to be. When you think about the amount that they were churning out all the time. But Anne Kirkbride is quite extraordinary. I can name any song or just sing a snippet for a song and she will go through the whole song, word perfect, right through. And she keeps saying, come on, try and catch me out. Her whole young life was being spent listening to songs and she got one of these memories. She can remember everything. She's quite amazing.
How much in advance do you know about what they're going to do? We're talking about the Coronation Street writers writing 6 months in advance.
Yeah, they actually are writing 6 months ahead. But we get our scripts just literally, and what we record is 5 weeks ahead of what the public see. So we get our scripts, say, 7 weeks before we know what's happening.
And do you have to sign confidentiality agreements and this sort of thing to make sure you're not spilling?
There are confidentiality agreements. It says on the front you mustn't let any of this out, but that you can't keep... If you're filming, you've got technicians and often you're filming in sets, exterior sets, with people are watching. It's very hard to keep things under wraps. They did film two endings for Tracy's trial.
Yes.
But it was bit of foregone conclusion. Everyone had seen her do it. It was calculated. They knew what had happened. But they did do that just so a bit of interest in the verdict.
And we hope Kambala goes on for a long time yet. But how would you like to see him go?
I wouldn't. And right. I never think about it. My view is I don't want to retire. Mm. While they want me, while I can do it, I should do it. So I never think of the negative things in life.
So you'd be pretty shocked one day if the executive producer came up and said, right, William, you're off. Car crash next week.
Don't even talk about it.
I'm sorry. I have to ask.
Talk about it. But if they suddenly said, Ken, I got some awful illness or something, I'd be getting quite worried, yeah.
Any big Christmas storylines coming up?
Well, I'll tell you this, the Barlows, look at this family I've got, and what a dysfunctional family it is. And we always have a horrible Christmas. I think our role is to make everybody else's Christmas look good.
You have had an unfair share of those, haven't you? Really?
Pretty well every one, mm-hmm. Yeah. I would call that an unfair share, mm-hmm. Yes.
And do you think you'd ever get behind the bar at the Rovers? Is that possible?
I don't think so, no. I did get behind the counter in the cabin, though, for a short while. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I remember that, actually. It was very good. So, look, let's just remind everyone about the book again, Soul on the Street. And yeah. As you say, this is not really... You wouldn't class it as an autobiography as such.
It's an autobiography, yeah. But it's also about my inner spiritual journey, and I hope this helps other people who are trying to find out the truth about life and life after death and all that sort of thing.
Wonderful to meet you. Thank you very much for your song choices. We're going to end on a Big Magic favourite, actually, The Carpenters, which we were talking about a few minutes ago, and yeah. Yesterday Once More.
Yesterday Once More. Wonderful.
Lovely.
Is that it?
Would you believe? I told you it's painless, didn't I?
Yeah, and quick.
I know.
I want to do it again.
We know what we're doing here, you know. Fine. Roll back.
We'll make it last.
Make sure it's recorded. Maybe we'll have to if it has to record.
That's a real compliment because he's exhausted.
I'm actually knackered.
You know, I'm sure you are. I'm sure your 4:30 starts are no fun at all. Well, you know. We've done breakfast show for the last year.
Okay, now well done. Well done. That's good.
It's not easy. I mean, I find it easier the more I do it. I think it's harder when you do it irregularly.
Yes, I think you're right.
Once you get into a pattern, it's never that great.
Yeah, no, that's right.
I'll just wrap up this last bit. I'll just say plug for the book.
Right, okay.
Carpenter's there, and that was another Sunday Night Magic Indulgence at Magic 105.4. William Roach, thank you so much for coming in.
I've really enjoyed it, Steve. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Much appreciated. Good luck with the book Soul on the Street, which is out now, of course. Yeah. And you can hear the full uncut interview, all the things you couldn't say on this show, William. We'll be up there tomorrow. There was not many, really.
Oh, not everything.
It's all available from tomorrow lunchtime at magic.co.uk/podcast. And we're back next Sunday evening for another Indulgence at Magic 105.4.
Well done. Magic 105.4. Magic 105.4.